Hey everyone, if you're enjoying Bjork Unraveled, there are two ways you can support the show. One, you can share it with your friends. And two, you can make a small monthly donation through Anchor or a one-time donation through PayPal. Both links are in the show notes. I'm an independent producer, so every dollar helps me break even on music and transcription software. Just being real here, if 20 of you donated $1 a month, I could cover my monthly expenses and keep the show going. Thanks so much for your support. All right, on to the show. You're listening to Bjork Unraveled, a series that demystifies Bjork's music one piece at a time. I'm your host, Savannah Wright.
I was having a conversation with a friend and this person he was dating.
This is Ahmed. He grew up in Saudi Arabia and now lives in Egypt.
And I was trying to flex a little bit and say, oh, I listen to Bjork and I'm really cool. And then my friend was like, oh, yet another gay guy listening to Bjork. Groundbreaking. I think it shattered a little bit of this image of her being such a fringe musician, especially in a country like here.
Ahmed discovered Bjork's music late one night while watching MTV Europe.
And then there was this strange video with this strange person. I had no idea what she was saying, what they were talking about. And it was, I think it was Hidden Place. And I was just mesmerized. And I think I was captivated ever since. I think growing up profoundly closeted in a country like Saudi Arabia, especially not being from the country itself, you are automatically the odd one out. And I guess you identify with the underdogs or the other oddballs or the people who are just doing their own thing, right? And then there's this person wearing a huge swan to the Oscars laying eggs, you know? How can she not be an icon?
Yeah, that's true.
Did you ever wonder why Bjork was or is such a huge gay icon? She's not like the Lady Gaga or the Cher, but she's this huge gay icon, and no one seems to know why or talk about it.
I mean, we do talk about it. It's a running gag on Bjork's vault of dank memes, which you can find on Instagram and Facebook. Like, in one meme, there's a line of text that says, "I'm a really interesting gay guy, starter pack." And then below it are four pictures. One of crystal meth, one of a Swiss cheese plant, one of cocaine, and the last one is the cover of Debut. And quick side note, if any of you know the owner of this account, please introduce me. I would love to do an episode with them. Anyway, the thing is, we don't really know why so many LGBTQ+ people love her music. So I asked you on Instagram, why is Bjork a gay or a queer icon? In this episode, Ahmed and I will discover the answer. I interviewed about a dozen Bjork Unraveled listeners. You'll hear in their own words why they identify with her music. And by the end of it, you'll understand how Bjork's music helps them and other LGBTQ+ fans feel safe and feel seen. Okay, Ahmed, here is what I found. So, like you were saying, Bjork isn't a gay activist the way that Lady Gaga is. She's not like out there, you know, rallying for the cause, but she does voice her support in subtler, less direct ways. And to be fair, that's how she approaches a lot of political issues, like feminism and current events. And so here's the main quote that I found. It's from an interview she did with Diva magazine in 2004. Quote, "I think everyone's bisexual to some degree or another. It's just a question of whether or not you choose to recognize it and embrace it. Personally, I think choosing between men and women is like choosing between cake and ice cream. You'd be daft not to try both when there are so many different flavors." Close quote.
She's such a scientist. Like, even the way she's approaching something like this is very, you know, Kinsey scale-ish, you know?
What do you mean by that?
It's a very scientific approach. I don't think normal people, but I don't think your average person talks like that. It's basic sociology or sexology for that matter.
She hasn't, I mean, still, like, she's been very kind of vague when she refers to her own sexuality. So, like, in a Reddit AMA in 2016, she talked about her love for RuPaul's Drag Race. She said, quote, "I was looking for something to watch with my daughter, and over the last few months, we watched all 8 series. I know all the queens now by name. We quote it left, right, and center," close quote. And as you probably know, one of the queens named Katya actually parodied Bjork in that season's All-Stars.
"An original Bjork is here.
I love your suit.
Thank you.
It reminds me of the lining of my small intestine."
And Bjork was all for it. Here's what she said. Quote, "Yes, I absolutely loved it, especially when she started humming to herself. I was hoping for a more current version, like a Vulnicura one, but she nailed the feminist activist tribal Volta. It's the sincerest form of flattery," close quote.
Fantastic. I don't think I saw that. I don't think I heard of her commenting on Katya's parody. I have to look that up. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, so this was all through Reddit. So it's just like her kind of written out quotes, but it's great that, you know, she really loves that part of gay culture. So, I mean, that's like, you know, another kind of hint. Okay, she's like familiar with some of the things happening in gay culture. But then there's the fact that she's from Iceland. So if you look at the Guide to Iceland tourism site, it says, quote, "Being queer in Iceland is not something that is tolerated. It is something that is celebrated. There are very few places in the world where people from across the spectrums of gender and sexuality receive as much love and encounter as little hate as they do in Iceland," close quote.
It sounds amazing. But then there's also how her inner circle recently also seems to be quite queer as well. I mean, there's obviously Arca, and everyone knows about Arca's story and everything. But then there's like James Murray with the R&B references and messages, and even thanked as that, as well as the masks and everything. And then Jesse Kenda as well. And yeah, it seems to be the inner circle thing as well. And I think that's where the RuPaul stuff probably came from as well.
Yeah, that's totally right. So that's something I want to talk about a little bit later. But yeah, I think it's definitely worth looking at the people that she collaborates with, like her friends, and, you know, how they might be influencing her tastes and things like that. That said, she's only been in public relationships with men, so she's not as much of a queer icon as people that she's worked with, like you said, Arca, or maybe like Serpent with Feet. But I don't think it matters that much, because I spoke to a lot of listeners from the LGBTQ+ community, and they said they still feel a kinship and solidarity with her. And so this is what I want to share with you, is like some of the things that they brought up, and it kind of echoes what you were telling me. A few of them brought up that they love Bjork's confidence in herself. Like, there's one listener, Bara from London, who said,
"I suppose this is a way of showing gratitude for someone who really, like, I felt stood by me with her music growing up, and like providing that space to explore who I am and to like accept who I am. Because, you know, I watched a lot of her interviews, and she was always very, like, unapologetically who she is."
I can totally relate to that. It's just watching this person not fit in and just do their own thing, regardless of how they're being made fun of as they're speaking. You watch her interviews, and interviewers would attempt to make fun of her as she answers their stupid questions about her quirkiness or her this or that. And she's just sitting there trying to give an honest answer and being herself and just going with the flow.
What is it? Why do you think people think you're a bit nutty?
I don't know. I think it's their problem, really. There's two ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. Either the way everybody expects you to be and do it like you're supposed to be, do it, and do it like morally correct, or
your way.
The way you can have a fun and a laugh. And I decided to stay on that side of the canyon, and I've never regretted it.
That's kind of what you deal with as a queer person. Like, why are you walking that way? And it's like, well, why are you so fixated on how I'm walking, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
Do you remember that old quote by her? I think it was also about the swan dress. It was about thinking how you feel on the inside, on the outside. Well, I feel pink. I want to wear a pink big jacket.
Yeah. I think the fashion is definitely a part of like what came up in these conversations people relate to, is like, you know, she is just doing what she wants to do, and she doesn't care how people are going to react. And also there's something about her, you can't really pin her down into one like style or one category. And that's what this one listener, Aureli from Panama, said.
I was used to thinking that we had to be boxed in a certain category as people. Like I could be straight, or I could be lesbian, or I could be butch, or I could be feminine. But through Björk's music and her interviews and just the way she presents herself to the world, I started seeing it as a whole, and that sensuality, sexuality, and emotions could come together as part of the entire human dimension and human experience.
It makes me think of how, I guess fortunate would be a good word here, how fortunate I am to kind of grow up watching one album being released after another and watching the characters that accompany these albums emerge one by one, relating to that, that you can also evolve as a person, not just fashion-wise, but also in how deep you want to delve into things, or how, you know, silly and dancey and you know, Volta you want to be with life. Yeah,
and I think that kind of what you brought up, like the different characters that she inhabits through each album and how she kind of gets in touch with different sides of herself through each album cycle, that brings me to another point. Because when I actually asked my listeners for their experiences, I asked for stories about how Björk helped them embrace their sexuality. But a few non-binary listeners told me that Björk's music actually helped them feel confident about their gender expression. Here's what Mace from Seattle said.
I feel like Björk is someone who, I don't know, inhabits a way of living that is kind of beyond binaries. Even just like the jump between homogenic to vespertine, like the fact that she kind of, those albums to me feel like so different. Like one is so just like explosive and big, and then the other is so soft and like intricate. And just that like vacillation I like relate to in my spirit in many ways. So I think for me, Björk just kind of, I was already feeling, you know, free to explore my gender, but it was just like play listening to Björk and just like more freedom.
I think Mace put it beautifully. You're allowed to exist as this loud, obnoxious person or this super introverted homebody. it makes me think of how her accent kind of shifts whenever she's speaking to anyone from the UK.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, she like, I remember in the post era, she kind of had this like Cockney accent because of living in London.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it?
From a certain angle.
All right.
I'm still learning about them English, you see. So,
right.
So you have to, you know, be patient with me.
That's funny as far as we're concerned.
No, she's very adaptable. She's like a chameleon. And I think that is something that like Mace brought up, just the fact that Björk can, you know, tap into all these different parts of herself. It makes sense why non-binary listeners would identify with that. Mace also brought up something that I hadn't heard of before, but it definitely relates to Björk's lyrics. It's called relational anarchy.
It's born out of the queer community, and it's kind of this way of seeing relationships like kind of in an anarchical way, kind of like turning relationships on their head. A piece of relational anarchy is being romantic with nature and cultivating intimacy with nature. And I think Björk is so intimate with nature and the way that she writes and reflects. And it's just so, I mean, there's countless songs to reference, not let alone like the entire album of Biophilia, where she's exploring the universe and the cosmos in such an intimate and like related way. So I just feel like there's this piece of Björk that's just like doing relational anarchy, and it gives me encouragement. And I'm like, yeah, I relate to a cliff similarly, and I am romantic with the ocean, and that's a part of my queerness. And I feel like Björk invites that.
I completely agree. And it's different ways of love. That's very aptly put. Absolutely.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that term, relational anarchy, but yeah, it totally makes sense when you think about Bjork's work, how she is romantic with a lot of different things. It's not just with her partners. Like, she's romantic with her friends. She's romantic with nature and the world. And yeah, I like that. So now, Ahmed, I want to ask you, are there specific Bjork songs that you relate to, ones that helped you embrace your sexuality or just gave you confidence to be yourself?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer, right? I mean, it's not one of my favorites, but Cocoon. Can we just talk about Cocoon for a second? It was kind of a mantra in a way, whenever you fall in love. Our harm of will. I think the entirety of Vespertine was it for me. Just relating to someone else and infatuation in that kind of almost secretive way, because it was also how you kind of grow up super closeted in a country like Saudi where you can fall in love, but it's a secret love. It's a hush-hush love. Like, you can't talk about it, not even to the person you're in love with. And so just to put on your headphones and, and, you know, mentally stalk this person while listening to Vespertine was kind of like, right, someone knows exactly what you're going through in a way. But the opposite is also true. I remember being angry with exes, and I remember being, I dare you to show me your palms. I'm so bored with cowards that say they want, and then they can't tender. 5 years, it was the ultimate breakup song before Vonnegut. I love it.
Yeah, no, that's actually interesting that you brought up those kind of two periods of Bjork's work, because I think a lot of homogenic songs and a lot of Vespertine songs were like the main ones that I heard when I asked people this question. All Is Full of Love, I think, was one that came up again and again for obvious reasons. It kind of goes back to that idea we were just talking about with relational anarchy, like love is all around you. But yeah, when you say the entire Vespertine album, that was definitely a big reference point. I really like what Zach, a listener from Tennessee, brought up about Hidden Place.
I love Hidden Place, that feeling of falling in love and going into this very safe space that something that maybe you've not found before can give you. And I think there's this duality to it that's sort of like, I want to give myself to you, but I'm afraid to, that resonates with me in a way that when I first came out and was very scared, because it's like a second puberty, that song really hits in the right way.
I think I completely relate to what Zach said, because that's exactly how Hidden Place felt like. I think my entire music taste had evolved and changed after discovering Hidden Place. I found out what I like. I like people who, women mostly, typical, right? Women mostly who are not afraid to show vulnerability. It's okay. It's okay. It's good to be emotionally raw, to be honest, to be emotionally expressive rather than just performing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a part of Vespertine that people relate to, is like wanting to express these feelings. But, you know, that line from Pagan Poetry, like, I'm going to keep it to myself. So it made sense that Vespertine came up a lot in these conversations that I had, and that you brought it up too. There were some other songs that were different or were unique to some of the conversations I had. So Javier from New York City brought up Venus as a Boy.
It kind of embraces, you know, this person who is male, but also kind of like romantic and has these like Venus elements about them, right? And Venus is typically the feminine, the, you know, the peaceful, the... It's the complete opposite of like this machismo archetype. And that was something that was like so interesting to me, that someone would like this, right? It was one of the first times where it felt like a man being feminine wasn't seen as this bad thing, but it was seen as this like thing to be worshipped or thing to be looked up on.
I don't know how I never caught on to that. I never put two and two together. That's brilliant. So this is a person falling in love with a man because they're an embodiment of this female god. That's incredible. I mean, isn't that what we're all looking for? Someone who's not an asshole?
Yeah, no, it's funny because when he said that, I was like, oh, duh. Like, of course that would be a song that would come up in like a conversation about sexuality and being LGBTQ+, but I had never put that together for some reason. So I just, yeah, I really loved what he said about being feminine, but that being a good thing and not being like looked down on.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the best of both worlds for me.
Yeah. And then there was another song that I really didn't expect to hear in this conversation, but it was Army of Me. Octavio from Brazil explains more.
Trans people here live in a state and total state of fear. They literally can't go out in the street by day. So when I say that her music gives me peace, is just not a peaceful peace, you know? Imagine being a little gay boy in a most terrible environment for LGBT people and listening some song like Arm of Me. And this gives me, to me, a kind of calm power, you know?
I also relate to it on a personal level, growing up in Saudi Arabia, where you couldn't even utter the word homosexual, let alone express it in any way publicly. Army of Me also gave me clout with the straights, because all of a sudden, if I played Army of Me, I wasn't this gay boy playing this ultra gay music. Army of Me kind of gave me street cred with the straights, like feast your ears, straight boys. But yeah, it was very short-lived, obviously.
That's so funny. Yeah, it is one of her most popular songs still on Spotify, which is interesting. And then, yeah, there was this one really powerful story that Anthony from Venezuela shared about the song Pneumonia, which is another song I wasn't expecting to get brought up, but here's what he said.
I read somewhere that is related about tuberculosis, and I interpreted myself that message more like I could feel suffocated, not as tuberculosis, but suffocated in a world where I could be accused. It's like the song says, all stillborn love that could have happened, all the moments you should have embraced, all the moments you should have not locked up, you know, because when you're pretending to be someone else, you don't really enjoy the moments. And that message at the end, when she said, understand so clearly, to shut yourself would be the hugest crime of them all. Wow, that's when I cry. Because I don't want to feel again like that. That specific message tells me that is the hugest crime, not being yourself. To shut yourself up would be the
hugest crime of them all. Hugest crime of them all.
It's such an overlooked song. You're absolutely right. It got me from Get Over the Sorrow, Girl. It's exactly that. It's a private anthem. It's something that you play to empower yourself. But you're making me think also of Mouth Mantra, because it's kind of the same theme in a way. and it also has that empowering defiance to it, where it's like, you're not allowed to exist or speak or express yourself. And here's this person saying, no, F that, I'm going to rage, essentially.
That's an interesting connection. I like that. And so to kind of wrap this part up, a lot of LGBTQ plus people identify with Bjork and her music, but does that mean she's a queer icon? To get to your question. Well, first, I want to get clear on what a queer icon is. How would you explain it, Ahmed?
I have no idea how to answer that. I mean, you think of a queer icon as someone like Cher, who, until Believe, did not make any quote-unquote queer music. She just made run-of-the-mill pop music, and all of a sudden, it was just this unexpected curveball. Do you believe in life after love? With Bjork, I feel like it's this person who's been defiant from the get-go and also entering her solo career from the clubs. I think that's also got something to do with it, no?
Yeah, that's something that another listener brought up, is like how her music was probably played in these gay clubs. And that could be, you know, how her music got popular with the LGBTQ plus community. But I also think you're kind of on the right track when you are continually bringing up these like female superstars, basically. Like you kind of mentioned, oh, I love when, you know, listening to these female artists who are like defiant, you know. So this listener, Frank from the Netherlands, he did some of his own research on Reddit about this, and he found this interesting quote.
Queer people, we relate to performers that we see aspects of ourselves in but are unable to express, which is why females, like, you know, powerful females that express themselves become queer icons.
Exactly. No, I don't know why he made me think of the Olympics in Athens in 2004. And it's just this bigger than life literal tent that enveloped everyone. How can that not be a queer icon? Someone whose dress is literally eating up athletes. It's incredible.
That's hilarious. I love that. But also, you know, she's like this, you know, she accepts everyone.
Right. And I think she's hilarious. I think her sense of humor might also play into that. This is someone who's not taking themselves too seriously, laying eggs and taking over things and making out with cats on videos. And just, I think her sense of humor also kind of, you know, plays into this a little bit.
Yeah, totally. Because she's very playful, like the way that she does music and performs and dresses. And so when I was kind of looking into, okay, what is a queer icon? I found this article from Untitled Magazine. It's from last year. They actually broke down queer icons into a few different categories. The first one is the woman who suffers for her art. So think Judy Garland, like classic queer icon. But a more contemporary example is Lana Del Rey. And then the second category is the diva. So like Beyonce, Janet Jackson, and Cher, who right. You mentioned. Yeah. Number three is the androgynous superstar. So like Grace Jones or David Bowie. Now Ziggy played guitar. Jamming good with web and gilly and the spiders from Mars. And then number four is the quirky icon who defies labels altogether. And that's definitely where Bjork fits in.
I think she's all four. She's done all four archetypes, hasn't she?
That's true, yeah.
In a way, right? Like the androgyny with Hunter and the no makeup and things like that. And the diva with punching reporters and refusing to say hi to fans and things like that, and just being, you know, notoriously difficult, supposedly, which she has the right to, obviously. But yeah, and then, yeah, and dresses that eat people. So it's incredible.
Yeah, and then also like the woman who suffers for her art. I mean, Vulnicora definitely captures that part of her personality. So yeah, no, I love that you said that she's all four, because of course Spear can't fit into one category. So near the end of the article, there's this quote that really, I think, gets to the heart of answering this question. It says, quote, "What makes a queer icon is not necessarily a persona or appearance, but the emotion an individual projects. One does not profess themselves a queer icon. It is something that over time becomes embedded in the culture surrounding their output." Close quote.
I think if that's true, then Vilni Kuder, which you just mentioned, has cemented her status as a diva. I think that album, like, privately saved my life a couple of times probably, but just the drama of it all, the strings and the drama.
So
yeah, and that's another album that a couple people brought up in these interviews that they really identified with. And so I think that's the key, is like, it's not what the artist themselves says, it's about the fans they attract and how their work resonates with fans. So Björk once joked that her average listener is a gay man from Mexico. So I think we have our answer that she's definitely a queer icon.
I follow this meme group on Facebook and Instagram, Björk's Vault of Dank Memes.
Yeah, same.
I can attest to that. The average Björk listener is a queer Mexican person who is really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the culture she attracts. And so I think that cements her status as a queer icon. But that culture that she attracts, it also extends to her collaborators. And this is something you brought up earlier, that the people that she works with are pioneers in the queer community. So there's a clip that I want to share from Javier from New York City. Again, we heard from him earlier.
So the first song that I heard that really even like made me aware that trans people existed was the Dull Flame of Desire on the Volta album, where she did with Anthony. I remember looking into that song and kind of seeing like, who is this Anthony person? You know, what is their thing? And I learned Anthony is a trans woman, and I thought it was really interesting to see someone not only feature someone on a song that is trans, but also like give them this prominent position of like, you are equal to me, you are, you know, we're just having this chemistry back and forth, and there's like this equality between us. I'm a singer, you're a singer, we're just gonna do this. That was really interesting to me. It made me feel like, oh, like there's space for people who are different.
I'm also thinking on the same album, My Juvenile, also featuring Anthony or Anoni, was featured as the voice of her conscience. So I don't think Anoni was just featured as an equal, but rather as an echo of Björk's voice herself. And that's the way they often performed. On the last Anthony and the Johnsons album, I think, one of those recordings from Björk and Anthony's Anoni sessions, Fleta, I think. And they're just sitting there echoing each other's vocals and sounds and just having this gibberish conversation with no words, but full of meaning and emotion. It's no one talks about that song, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. It's like they're not just equals, but they're almost halves of a whole in this song that you brought up.
I'm sorry I keep interrupting you, but and then that's explored again in Atom Dance. They kind of do this halfsies twinsies thing. I guess it's a recurring theme, and I love that. I hope they collaborate again and again, and I hope it becomes one of those every couple of albums you get one Noni song.
Yeah, I agree. I think their voices complement each other so well, and yeah, I love whenever they collaborate, so I totally agree. But you know, this whole idea of like Bjork is a queer icon because of the listeners and collaborators and culture that she attracts, that's one way of answering the question. But there were other reasons that the listeners that I interviewed brought up. And Javier, who I mentioned earlier, said that her playfulness with fashion is a little bit reminiscent of drag. Mace brought up how Bjork draws people into imaginative ways of living, which captures the queer spirit. Bara brought up how accepting she is of everyone. And there is one answer I still find myself thinking about. Here's Jay from Sydney, Australia.
I feel like a lot of what she's exploring is about being post-human. It's almost like evolving beyond, you know, what we have been to some, whatever the next form is going to be. So, you know, a lot of the characters she creates or music she creates, it's not tied to our body, but it's still tied to nature, but it's, you know, enhanced by technology, but then it's also post-gender, but then it's also very sexual, but then it can also be very, I don't know, cold and disembodied. So I think that's kind of how I'd say it would fit in with queer culture, because part of, being queer is like looking back at society and looking at structures and thinking, I don't really like this, or I don't really fit in with this. Things can be done differently, or there's a different way or a better way that we could be doing things.
Yeah, I think she takes on this role of a removed sociologist looking at humans from the very beginning, from human behavior. This person or this entity watching humans run amok and you know, and people dabbling outside. It's always this person who is removed.
Yeah. I love that you brought up human behavior, because I think she is a little bit, you know, on the outside kind of looking at like, what does it mean to be human and why do we do these silly things? But she's also very much in it, because she's expressing these human emotions that I feel like very few other artists I've heard can express just through their voice. Yeah, I just love what Jay said about being post-human, because it kind of cements that idea that you can't really put her in a box. Like, she's looking back at all of the things that we silly humans do and questioning it, like, why do we dress this way? Why do we sing this way? You know, why do we make music this way? And presenting an alternative way through all of her work.
Yeah, I don't have the answer to that, but yeah, absolutely. The only thing I'd say is the only way you can put her in a box is if that box was wearable.
I love that. So I think that answers it, Ahmed. I think Bjork is a queer icon because of how she relates to the world around her, because she can't be put in a box unless she's wearing it, and because she's unapologetically herself. She expresses those ideas through her lyrics, her fashion, her music, and all of those factors create a haven, a safe place for LGBTQ plus listeners. So how'd I do, Ahmed? Do you feel like I answered the question?
I think we're there. I think we're there. I think the answers are going to be in a beer concert after party in Mexico City. But I think we're there.
Yeah, I think we've got to the surface level answer. But yeah, I think there's like way more that you can explore through people's experiences. And that's how I'm going to end the episode, is with some of these really beautiful stories that certain listeners shared about how Bjork's music helped them get through tough times and helped them, you know, embrace their sexuality or their gender expression and just feel more confident and safe in the world. But I want to thank you for bringing this topic to my attention, because when I was looking around online, there were a couple articles that would reference Bjork as a queer icon, but nothing that really did a lot of research, that really asked a lot of different fans.
I'm really happy to be a part of it, really.
And now I turn the mic back to you. Here are some of your stories about how Bjork's music helped you feel seen, safe, and confident about who you are. This is Sumner.
I'm from Alabama, so it's like not the best place to be gay, obviously. It gave me a chance to like think about going to Iceland, you know, traveling there mentally and giving a space, safe space to where I could express myself and my sexuality, because it was just me at that point. Like, that's all who I told. And it was just nice having this own little like music that was like my own little place to go to.
This is Frank from the Netherlands, who we heard from earlier in the episode.
I remember there was a boy who I found really, I don't know, it's just, I have to smile thinking about it, but I went out to this party with him, and back in those days, you know, like if you know, everybody was like, oh, she's cool, or she's that person's not cool, I don't like that person's music, or what have you. When you're a teenager, that's just how you talk. When Bjork came up, I remember he was like, oh, that's cool, that's really cool. And there was a change in like him saying how cool she was. I felt like there was something that we both wanted to say to each other. And I didn't say it, and he didn't say anything either. But later on, it was just one of those things that we kind of smiled back on at that night.
And here's Gustavo from Mexico City.
When I came out to my family, it was about 1998. I was 15 years old. And my parents didn't take it very well at the beginning. And they sent me to psychological therapy. And when I started going to therapy, the doctor asked me one session, asked me to bring my favorite music. And I gave him a homogenic album, which was the latest in that time. He thought it was like a kind of depressing or gloomy. And from that point, I felt like then her music became part of my identity too. I embraced that. Bjork's music helped me to overcome all that process of self-acceptance. And yeah, to me, it's one of the biggest influence in my life.
A huge thank you to everyone who shared their stories for this episode. Anthony, Aureli, Bara, Frank, Gustavo, Javier, Jay, Mace, Octavio, Sumner, and Zach. And thank you to Ahmed for co-hosting this episode with me. You can follow him on Instagram at blockb, as in the letter B, furniture. This concludes the second season of Bjork Unraveled, but don't worry, I have a few bonus episodes coming your way. 2022 is going to be a big year for Bjork. She's back on the road performing Bjork Orchestral and Cornucopia, which I actually saw last night. Review to follow. And Bjork has a new album in the works, but much of that album remains shrouded in mystery. In the next episode, Bjork superfan Gabriel Lucas will join me to discuss this and other Bjork mysteries, including some unreleased material from her catalog. We'll make best guesses about what these songs sounded like, and we'll make predictions about the next chapter of her career. Look for that in your feeds next Thursday. That's right, you don't have to wait 2 weeks this time. Next Thursday. You've been listening to Bjork Unraveled, a series that demystifies Bjork's music one piece at a time. Bjork Unraveled is produced independently by me, Savannah Wright. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and submit a review on whatever podcast app you're using. And consider donating to the show. There are two links in the show notes where you can make a monthly or a one-time donation. I'm an independent producer, so every dollar will go towards music, software, and equipment. With your help, I can continue the show. This episode is brought to you by Enrico Topo, Damaretta Yen, Frank Hassenstab, John Wario Rosa, Bridget Wright, James Wright, Troy Tate, Lara Tate, Anthony Rodriguez, Kinga Miklos, and Eli Wright. You remind me of the love in me. If you have an idea for a future episode, tell me about it. You can find me on Instagram at Bjork Unraveled or email me at bjorkunraveled@gmail.com. I'm Savannah Wright. Thanks for listening.